You're listening to the Fresh Hell Podcast. Fresh Hell contains stories of a disturbing and often graphic nature and is intended for a mature audience. Please don't let your kids listen to this, or they might turn out like us. Hi, I'm Annie in Massachusetts.
And I'm Johanna from the wine region in Austria, and you're listening to your favorite international podcast. This is Fresh Hell, the podcast hosted by two online friends who never met in real life and who like to talk about all those interesting and macabre stories.
Thank you so much to everyone who voted in the People's Choice Podcast Awards. We made it through in three categories, and so now we are visible on the slate. You can vote for us if you were selected. You can vote for us in Female Hosted, History, and True Crime. Please make sure you check your email to see if you were selected to vote in the final slate. We are nominated. We made it through with a lot of very amazing and very, very well-known podcasts. So I think this year is a real long shot and every vote will count.
Yeah. It's definitely a tough competition, so thank you again for all your support. If you want to know more on how to support us or contact us or anything else you might want to know, please listen until the end. That's when you'll hear all about it. The only thing I want to say first is please make sure to check your emails in case you were selected as a final voter.
That's right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, now on to today's topic. We decided we still need a slightly lighthearted episode. Lighthearted, I don't know, but maybe chattier, not that. You know what I mean, guys. Before we're going back to horrible murders next week. So today we want to talk about the weirdest death, or some of the weirdest deaths in history. It's in a way part two, because we did an episode like this already. It's in episode 56, titled, We Don't Know How to Name This One. Remember, Annie?
I do remember. I think we're going to call this one, we don't know how to name this one either. I think it makes the most sense, right? In that first one, we talked about Aeschylus's death, when an eagle confused his bald head with a stone and threw a turtle at him. That's rough. That feels deliberate, you know? And about Tycho Brahe, who died after holding his urine in for too long. Basically, he held it and exploded. Didn't he have a pet moose?
Yeah, he did. I think he got the pet moose drunk regularly, something like that.
That's right. I'm sure I made a joke about my sister.
We recorded this episode pretty much in the beginning of the pandemic.
Oh, I need to go back and re-listen. Or just listen for the first time, really. But yeah, that episode was not just about bizarre deaths. We talked about Napoleon I being attacked by rabbits, and I think also how his penis ended up under some guy's bed. Is that right?
It's true.
And then that super chaotic Olympic marathon in 1904.
It was my favorite thing ever.
Every event planner's worst nightmare. That was more about just bizarre moments in history, which included, I guess, a lot of death, but not all death. I think in hindsight, we should have called that one Everything is Fucked for Me Today, which is one of my favorite quotes of yours. That's probably our most common exchange. We've already mentioned this maybe, but often when I text Johanna first thing in the morning, it's how she knows I'm still breathing. I just type good morning, and half the time, for some reason, my phone changes it to good nothing. But half the time, that's also true, so we just leave it. And then every so often, I get back, good nothing, everything is fucked for me today. And I'm like, you do. Anyhow, this time, today, we're just going to talk about deaths. Johanna, would you like to start?
My pleasure. Also, I think we should mention that we're not making fun of people dying, but I mean, everybody's gonna die. You're gonna die, I'm gonna die, everybody's gonna die.
Oh, yeah.
And some deaths are more bizarre than others, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's okay to laugh about death a little bit, especially after several hundred years have passed, right? I think it's enough time that no one's gonna feel.
I hope so. Anyway, anytime I read an interesting article or some interesting snippet somewhere, I always take a screenshot and I save it in a folder titled Episode Ideas.
Same.
And I had saved this following story a while ago, and it's the story of Aga Muhammad Khan Qajar, and his death in 1797. So Aga Muhammad Khan Qajar was the founder and first ruler of the Qajar dynasty in Persia, which is modern-day Iran, and he's often referred to as Aga Muhammad Shah. He was born around 1742 in Astarabad, and he's descending from the Qanlu branch of the Qajar tribe. And the Qajars were part of the Turkoman Kizilbash groups that sprang up and spread in Asia Minor from around the 10th and 11th centuries. So Aga Muhammad Khan was the eldest son of his clan's chieftain Mohammed Hasan Khan Qajar, and the grandson of Fath Ali Khan Qajar, who was an important nobleman who unfortunately met his end at the hands of Shah Tahmasp II. If I mispronounce any of the names, I'm very sorry, I'm trying my best. And this death was possibly influenced by Nader Koli Bek, who would later become known as Nader Shah, and he would establish the Ashfarid dynasty when he took over the throne in 1736. Persia has a really complicated history, and I just didn't want to gloss over everything.
Yeah.
So I'm mentioning a few basics here.
Sure. I think it's fascinating. I don't know very much about it.
Aga Muhammad Khan had quite a few siblings, many half-brothers and brothers. And don't worry, I'm not going to tell you any of the names now or anytime. So Nader Shah is on the Persian throne. And there are a lot of different tribes that are ruled by the Shah, but there's a lot of fighting and plotting going on most of the time. I think you can imagine like Game of Thrones set in 18th century Persia.
Yeah. Anytime there's a crown involved, anytime there's a kingdom to rule, you know.
Yeah, especially when it's not stabilized yet in a way that there are lots of different, you know, chieftains, different tribes,
exactly,
different families trying to gain power.
Yeah.
And that's what happened here. So Nader Shah dies in 1747, and of course, immediately there are a bunch of different groups that want to take the throne, and one of them is Muhammad Hasan, so that's Muhammad Khan's father. But it wasn't as easy as just taking it. Trying to take over the power from the Ashfar tribe meant war, and so Nader Shah's nephew Adil Shah came charging for Mashhad, where the Qajar tribe was located. And the plan was to capture Muhammad Hasan. And that plan didn't work out at all. Adil Shah failed to nab Muhammad Hasan. He did, however, manage to get a hold of Aga Muhammad Khan, and Adil Shah initially planned to have the son of his enemy executed. He was a child, by the way, he's 6 years old when he got kidnapped or taken as a hostage. So they want to execute a six-year-old, but then they decide differently and they spare his life. But instead, they chose to have him castrated and then released again.
Oof.
Now, what's interesting to mention for me anyway, that was interesting, Aga, which usually means sir or mister. But in Aga Muhammad Khan's title, if you look at the Persian writing, it is spelled a little bit differently. So not when you look at it in English. In English, it's A-G-H-A. But if you look at the Persian word, it's written differently. And apparently the way the Aga is written in Aga Muhammad Khan's case, it's common for eunuchs serving at court. So I found that interesting.
Yeah.
So as I said, Muhammad Khan was roughly 6 years old when he was castrated. And of course, this had severe consequences for the prepubescent boy. Nowadays, we know that it will cause a high voice that will never drop. A smaller build, it will cause problems with bone density and muscle growth. And of course, all of this also leads to mental health issues for Aga Muhammad Khan. I mean, it's
incredibly traumatic.
It's super traumatic. And he was rather insecure as he grew older, constantly had the feeling people were staring at him because he was... When you looked at him from afar, apparently he looked like a teenager, like a very young boy.
Yes, and would for his whole life.
Yeah. So Aga Muhammad Khan was rather insecure as he grew older. He constantly had the feeling that people were staring at him, and that also led to kind of anger issues.
Mm-hmm.
Also, he was described as being rather frail and unhealthy in general, and that he also suffered from epilepsy at least once.
Yeah.
And it's all, as Annie said, really traumatic and very sad. Now, during the next decade, there was basically constant war. Battles were fought and lost or won. And I'm not going to go into all of the details, but what you should know, things didn't turn out well for Muhammad Hasan, so Muhammad Khan's father. He was betrayed by his own followers and eventually killed by his old rival. Because Aga Muhammad Khan was castrated, his brother Hossein Kuli Khan was appointed as the new head of the tribe. And as for Aga Muhammad Khan, he and his brother had to flee, and they later attempted an attack on Astarabad, but had to flee again. They were not successful. Ultimately, he got caught and he was sent to Tehran as a hostage under the rule of Karim Khan. Now, that's where it gets important. Karim Khan Sand, who lived from 1705 to 1779, was the founder of the Sand dynasty, which ruled over Persia from 1751 to 1794. And Karim Khan's reign is often considered a period of stability and prosperity, in contrast to the preceding years of rather a lot of turmoil and fragmentation. Karim Khan's rule was marked by a pragmatic foreign policy that sought to maintain peace with neighboring powers, and he focused on consolidating his authority within Iran and securing his borders. And he managed to fend off external threats, and he kept Persia relatively safe from the upheavals that were occurring in other parts of the region. Muhammad Khan is in Tehran, living at the court of Karim Khan. And during his time there, Aga Muhammad Khan was treated fairly well by Karim Khan. He was treated more like an esteemed guest at court than a prisoner. And in fact, over time, Karim Khan valued Muhammad Khan's political advice and often sought his counsel on state matters, which is a great honor and shows a lot of trust.
Of course.
Then, on 1st of March 1779, while Aga Muhammad Khan was out hunting, he received the news that Karim Khan had passed away. The ruler had been battling an illness for the last 6 months, so this didn't really come as a surprise. Historians think that it was most likely tuberculosis that had killed him.
This is all very interesting to me because I don't know anything about the history of this part of the world at all, like nothing.
When Aga Muhammad heard the news of Karim Khan's death, he rounded up some of his most loyal supporters and made his way to Tehran to find more allies, not only in Tehran, but also in all the other Persian tribes. And again, a lot of battles followed, even with his own brothers, and ultimately he took over the throne in 1789. And he named his nephew Baba Khan as the heir, because remember, he couldn't have heirs of his own. During his reign, he managed to unite Persia, and he even kind of roped in the Caucasus region, which had been like a long-lost buddy of Iran for ages, I guess. And he also moved the capital of his kingdom to Tehran, which was a smart move because Tehran was closer to the new Caucasus territories, so he had easier control over his newly annexed regions. The next years were full of the same old, you know, more drama, more battles, more 3D chess, I'd like to call it, with the other tribal leaders. Alright, let's finally get to the part we're all here for, Aga Muhammad Khan's death. Because Aga Muhammad's time in the spotlight was rather brief. After conquering yet another city, this time Shusha, he met his fate in a tent of all places. And it all started with a heated argument between two servants. And as the argument continued, they forgot to use their inside voices and they started to yell at each other. They were making such a ruckus that Aga Muhammad Khan got extremely annoyed and he did the only rational and logical thing to stop the nonsense. He ordered their execution.
What else are you gonna do? Also, as a migraine sufferer, immediate death for using your outside voice while indoors isn't as wild as some of you might be imagining. I know some of you know what I'm talking about. If you know, you know. But I don't think he had a migraine.
I don't think so either. No. I mean, it's possible.
I mean, who can say?
Who can say?
Maybe. If he did, that would explain a lot. That's all.
The Shah's advisor tried to plead with Muhammad Khan, asking him to show his kindness. But the Shah turned a deaf ear and these two men were going to be executed. But wait, it's Friday evening, the sacred day of worship in Islam, so they can't execute them right there and then, they have to wait for Saturday. And so Aga Muhammad Khan orders them to get back to work until their execution. He doesn't have them locked in a room or chained up, nothing like that. And what could possibly go wrong? Guess what? Tomorrow your head will be chopped off, but until then, serve me my meals and tuck me into bed, please. I mean, without the please.
Sure. Yeah, obviously.
The two servants knew that the Shah wouldn't just forget about the whole thing. He wasn't known to be too kind when it came to those things. And with no glimmer of hope left, they formed a plan. And they even had another servant join them. Late at night, while the Shah slumbered away in his bed, The now trio slipped into the royal pavilion armed with daggers and knives, and in a flurry of stealth and blades, they brought Aga Muhammad's reign to an abrupt end.
It was very stabby. And in a roundabout way, let that be a lesson not to let greed cause your death, because had he sacrificed the work he expected them to do before their deaths and the manpower needed to guard them, he maybe would have survived. Listen, kids, Auntie Annie is using regicide as a lesson in greed, but it is what it is. Here we are. All right, let me tell you about two deaths hundreds of years apart, which we've done before, but with murder. Today's stories both involve laughing about animals and figs. So, first, we have the Greek-Phoenician philosopher Chrysippus of Soli, who lived from 279 BC to 206 BC. He's best known as one of the most influential thinkers within the Stoic school of philosophy. The Stoics emphasized living in accordance with nature, cultivating virtue, and developing a rational understanding of the world. Chrysippus made significant contributions to Stoic philosophy, particularly in the fields of logic and ethics.
Everybody loves a moral philosopher, right?
Who doesn't? What's not to love? The cheaty of every group. The Stoics are not initially, I'm like, oh, Stoic philosophy, like my dad. No, it doesn't mean just a person who has, like, no emotional recognition on the outside. It goes way deeper. All right. So, he was born in Soli, that's present-day Turkey, as the son of Apollonius of Tarsus, a very influential man at the time in the region. So this was a wealthy family. For whatever reason, the whole property was confiscated when Chrysippus was a young man, and he was basically left without an inheritance. So what did he do? He moved to Athens, where he came in contact with the great thinkers of the time, and he became a student of the Stoic philosophy. Explaining the works and thoughts of a philosopher in a short and understandable way requires knowledge on the topic that I do not possess. So I'm going to leave this to the experts, and this is from dailystoic.com. Quote, as both a student and the head of the Stoic school, Chrysippus dedicated the majority of his time to writing. He's said to never have written less than 500 lines a day, ultimately completing over 700 works of philosophy in his lifetime. His writing was known to be extremely comprehensive, as he preferred to flesh out both sides of an argument before asserting anything himself. Same. As a result, many criticized his work, claiming that portions of it were unoriginal and carelessly organized. Despite this, he was generally accepted as a premier philosophical authority, and his position at the school was never questioned. It was long believed that none of his written works survived the passage of time. Most of what we know about the philosophy of Chrysippus comes from notes in the works of Cicero, Seneca, Galen, Plutarch, and other philosophers. In recent years, fragments of his works have been discovered in the Herculaneum Papyri, but none in their entirety. As we noted above, you won't find any books written by Chrysippus. What we do know about his writing is based on the work of the philosophers that followed him. Through these texts, it is clear that Chrysippus was an expert and prolific writer in the fields of logic, theory of knowledge, ethics, and physics. Specifically, he created a detailed system of propositional logic that focused on helping us better understand the functioning of the universe. You may have encountered this form of logic, consisting of if-then statements, in a mathematics or computer science class. While seemingly straightforward today, this system revolutionized philosophy at the time. Chrysippus, like many Stoics, believed that the world was deterministic. In other words, all things in our lives are predetermined and are responses to factors out of our control. However, Chrysippus still believed in personal freedom and the importance of developing an individual understanding of the world. End quote. There are a lot of great quotes by Chrysippus. This is our favorite. Quote, there could be no justice unless there were also injustice. No courage unless there were cowardice. No truth unless there were falsehood. End quote.
Yep, I agree with that. I say something similar very often.
Yep, absolutely. All right. And yeah, when I'm having a really bad day, it's like, that's all right. If you have no bad days, you don't appreciate the good days. All right. So now let's talk about his death. There are two accounts, just like there are two ways to pronounce his name, allegedly. And like me, with his name throughout this episode, we'll give you both. So he died in 206 BC at the age of 73, which was a great age, especially at the time. Here's the first account of how he died. And that says that he got very drunk at a feast, got sick, and then died shortly thereafter. So just a really, really bad hangover took him out. But we're gonna talk about the second account. And by the way, both accounts are from the same person, Diogenes Laertius, who was basically a biographer for ancient philosophers. So here's the second account. Chrysippus was sitting around thinking about important Stoic stuff when he saw a donkey eating a fig from a fig tree. He apparently found this very amusing and yelled out, quote, "Now give the donkey a drink of pure wine to wash down the figs," end quote, which he found so funny that he started to laugh and laugh and laugh at his own joke.
Can relate. I make myself laugh regularly.
Same. Constantly. Paul's always like, what are you laughing at? And I'm like, nothing. It's not funny to anyone else. It's fine. But we don't get hysterical. We stop laughing, you know, eventually. But he didn't. He just kept laughing and laughing and laughing until he died of his laughing fit. And if that's true, and it is something that happens, then the most likely cause of death would have been a heart attack or suffocation.
Well, at least he died watching a cute donkey eat. I think there are way worse ways to go.
Yeah. Dropping dead laughing hard is not a bad way to go at all. And like I said, it's happened more times than you would think. And as I said, there's a second story of a death involving an animal and a fig and laughing to death, and it's the story of how King Martin of Aragon died. King Martin of Aragon was also commonly known as Martin the Humane. He ruled Aragon, Valencia, Sardinia, and Corsica from 1396 to 1410. He was a member of the House of Barcelona, a prominent dynasty on the Iberian Peninsula, known for their role in the development and expansion of the Aragonese and Catalan territories. Martin's ascension to the throne was not without controversy. His predecessor, King Martin I of Sicily, his namesake, had left the crown to Martin of Aragon. However, his claim faced opposition from various quarters, leading to disputes over succession. His reign was also affected by internal rivalries and conflicts over power. We see this over and over in history, and it's not even just a thing of the past.
Yeah, as we said, it's constant Game of Thrones
everywhere. All the time.
When power is involved. Yep. Yeah.
During his regency, Martin had to deal with territorial disputes, especially concerning the crown of Castile. The most significant conflict during this reign was the so-called, quote, Compromise of Casp, a complex process that resolved the issue of succession to the crown of Aragon and ensured that Martin's dynasty would continue to rule. Martin was known for his interest in culture and the arts. He supported the flourishing of Catalan literature and patronized writers and artists of the time, contributing to the cultural vibrancy of his kingdom. Maybe you ask yourself why his name was the Humane. The Humane is nice. It's better than the Inhumane. You want to be Martin the Inhumane? That'd be terrible.
Well, it depends what you're trying to, bring across.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking to Vlad the Impaler, he would have a very different view. So, that was due to his mild-mannered and just approach to ruling. He was respected for his fairness and desire to resolve conflicts peacefully. King Martin of Aragon played a crucial role in the history of the Crown of Aragon and left a lasting impact on the culture and politics of the region. But what about his death, that occurred in 1410 when he was 53 years old? It was the evening of May 31st, 1410, and Martin had just finished his dinner, where he had eaten an entire goose. Now, you might say, wow, a whole goose? But apparently that was not an unusual amount of food for this particular king. I looked it up, and today, they say an 8-pound goose, which was the smallest size goose that I found, and that's about half a stone or 3.6 kilograms. That will serve 4 to 5 people comfortably. So for one person, Even a small goose, it's too much to eat in one sitting.
Mm.
I like a big meal, but that's too much goose. It's too much.
It's too much. And I'm sure he didn't just have the goose.
No.
I'm sure he had some side dishes and something
was
sweet
gravy
and wine.
And pie yeah. and bread. Oh, now I'm hungry. So he then retires to bed, but he's not quite ready to snooze off. So he calls in his court jester. So the jester comes in and he starts to entertain the king. And he tells him a joke. Are you ready to hear this extraordinarily funny joke? Quote, in the next vineyard, where I saw a young deer hanging by his tail from a tree, as if someone had so punished him for stealing figs. End quote.
Crickets.
Yeah, tough crowd.
Different times, you know.
It's a hard room. Right. So, yeah, today we're like, uh-huh, and then. But there's no and then. No and then. So the king started laughing and laughing and laughing and laughing and couldn't stop. He laughed so much that he fell out of bed, and the story goes that he was dead before he even hit the floor. So, just like in the story about Chrysippus's death, did the king suffocate? Or did he maybe have a heart attack or a stroke? All are possible. Some, however, think it's more sinister. Some people think that he had actually been poisoned during his dinner. Also, of course, it could be simple food poisoning, but no one mentioned any typical symptoms for that, so I think we can kind of rule that one out. And don't forget the plague. Lots of people were just dying from the plague, and some people think he just died of plague, so that's pretty much always an option at the time.
Honestly, a man in his 50s who eats extreme amounts of fatty food right before bed, it sounds like heart failure isn't too far-fetched here.
Right? This is not a man who's eating nothing but poached salmon and field greens and running. I think they're both cases of probably laughing to death by heart attack. And I'm going to say it. If you're going to lose someone knowing that they literally spent their last moments laughing as hard as they've ever laughed would not be a terrible thing, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to be laughing hysterically and dead before you hit the ground. That's my second new preferred. My number one is go in your sleep, and this is now my new number two.
Yeah, it's a good way to go.
It's a good death, as you know. Yeah.
Okay, next I have an Austrian death. It's the story of a man named Hans Steininger, and for that we need to travel to Upper Austria in the 16th century. The second half of the 16th century, and the exact place is Braunau am Inn. Now, the name of the town might ring a bell for some of our listeners. Some might think, huh, I've heard that name before. And you might, if you are firm on history of World War II, because Braunau am Inn is also the birthplace of Adolf Hitler. But that was way, way, way later, and so we return to Hans Steininger, who in the second half of the 16th century was the mayor of Braunau am Inn. And I wish I could tell you a whole bunch of details about him, but there are only a couple of things we know. We know that he was born around 1508 in Pfarrkirchen, a town that's in Bavaria, but only 22 kilometers north of Braunau. I'm sorry, I forgot to convert, but it's not far, not far at
it's
all.
It's fine.
Roughly 10 miles. I can't tell you how Hans Steininger became mayor of Braunau, but apparently he was rather well-liked. He was voted into office several times. Of course, back then, it's not like every citizen of that town was allowed to vote for the mayor, so maybe he was just friends with the right people. Who can say? The other thing we know is that he had a very impressive beard. And if you listen to us regularly, you know that we stan a good mustache or moustache, how I like to say, or a full beard. We are very into beard history and beard fashion, and we will always mention when someone has impressive facial hair.
That's right, we do.
But this beard, impressive would be an understatement. He had a full beard that was almost 2 meters long, and that's 6.5 feet. As I said, I love a good beard, but it has to be nicely groomed and styled. And that's what I don't like about Hans's beard. It was just long, and that's it. Annie, you remember in The Life of Brian when Brian meets the hermit who didn't talk for 18 years, who sits in this... Yeah. Remember his beard?
Yeah.
It's something like that, just way longer. And maybe not that unkept. But it was long and thinned at the end. It wasn't full to the end. It looked kind of sad and scraggly. I don't know. Not a fan. Don't like it.
I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
Usually when Hans Steininger was walking around town, he would have his long-ass beard rolled up and stored in a pouch around his neck. The pouch was either made of leather or velvet, depending on the sources, and maybe he had different bags for different outfits and occasions. Who knows?
Who can say?
And it also makes me wonder why I even have such a long beard if you have to roll it up 90% of the time. And that's basically why I cut my hair short. Shorter. That went all the way down to my waist. Well, it's one of the reasons, at least. It's not like he could attempt to be in the Guinness Book of World Records either, because that was not a thing yet. So it all sounds like an extreme hassle, to be honest, to have this long beard.
Yeah.
And he would come to regret it anyway. On 28th of September, 1567, according to the story, or lore, who knows, a fire broke out in the city of Braunau. And we can all picture these narrow European streets with all the wooden structures, one right next to the other. Whenever a fire broke out back in those days, it was extremely difficult to get it under control and not let it destroy the whole city. And the good people of Braunau were trying their best to extinguish the flames, and Hans Steininger left his home in such a hurry, so it's either his home that he had to leave, or city hall, or whatever. He was in such a hurry that he had no time to roll up his beard, and while running downstairs, he stepped on his beard, fell down the stairs, and broke his neck.
Oof.
Of course, as with so many good stories, there are several variations. His beard actually caught fire and he burned alive. He didn't break his neck.
That's worse.
Other variations don't even mention a fire. He stepped on his beard while trying to get on his horse and broke his neck this way. Another one said that he was informed of the death of Emperor Maximilian II, and when he heard the news, he jumped up in shock, stumbled over his beard, fell, and died.
Yeah.
This one can't be true, though, because allegedly Hans Steininger died on 28th of October 1567, and Emperor Maximilian died on 12th of October 1576, so that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But the common thing in all these stories is that Hans Steininger died because of his foolish love for his long beard. And Hans became somewhat of a local legend, and if you ever make it to Braunau, you can find his portrait as a relief on the side of the local church. You can also find him at the Louvre in a miniature painting by an unknown German artist.
Excellent. I look forward to seeing that very long, sad beard. I'm with you, though. Like, any kind of long, just cut it off while it's still luscious. I had to cut mine. It's the same. I got to about waist length, and then just the weight of it. Like, when I got in the shower and the water hit the back of my head, my neck would snap back. Like, maybe he just tried to wash his beard in a weird way, and it snapped his bony neck. I don't know. Last but not least, I want to tell you about the death of John Sedgwick. Sedgwick was born on September 13th. 1813, and he was a career soldier and Union Army general during the Civil War. So he fought against the Confederate Army. This is from battlefields.org. Quote, John Sedgwick was born in September 1813 in Cornwall Hollow in the Berkshire Mountains of northwest Connecticut. He attended the Sharon Academy and taught for 2 years himself before receiving an appointment to the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. Sedgwick graduated in 1837 in the middle of a prodigious class that included Braxton Bragg, Jubal Early, John C. Pemberton, and Joseph Hooker. He was commissioned a second lieutenant in the artillery, serving under both Zachary Taylor and Winfield Scott. He was breveted twice, first for his actions at the battles of Contreras and Churubusco, then again, 3 weeks later, at the storming of Chapultepec. Returning home, Sedgwick was assigned the newly created 1st Cavalry. In the 1850s, as the nation lurched inexorably toward civil war, he, like most in the regular army, was stationed on the western frontier. At the outbreak of the Civil War in 1861, Sedgwick reported to Washington, D.C. to serve as acting inspector general of the city, and was promoted to Brigadier General of Volunteers in August. He commanded a division in Edwin Bull Sumner's Corps during General McClellan's Peninsula Campaign, and was wounded in the arm and the leg at the Battle of Fraser's Farm on June 30, 1862. He was promoted to Major General on the 4th of July. At the Battle of Antietam, Sedgwick's division was decimated by artillery and a powerful Confederate flank attack. Sedgwick himself displayed tremendous gallantry, however, and was wounded 3 times and had a horse shot from under him before being carried unconscious from the field. Uncle John, as his men affectionately dubbed him, reported back for duty less than 90 days later. The horse was fine. It just got shot, it was grazed and startled, and got up and lived a happy life with its horse family. Okay. Continuing on. Following his return with his former classmate Joseph Hooker, now leading the Army of the Potomac, Sedgwick was given command of the Sixth Corps. During the Chancellorsville campaign in May 1863, Sedgwick's men successfully stormed Mary's Heights above Fredericksburg, which was defended by another of his West Point classmates, Jubal Early, but they were unable to prevent a disastrous Union defeat at Chancellorsville. Sedgwick's Sixth Corps was mostly held in reserve at Gettysburg, but performed exceptionally at the Battle of Rappahannock Station in November, capturing 4 field pieces, 8 stands of enemy colors, and 1,700 prisoners. End quote. This is a career military man who had seen quite a bit of action. He'd been wounded several times, thrice in the same battle, and I think it's no exaggeration to call him brave. But sometimes bravery can turn into cockiness, and that's what ultimately led to General Sedgwick's demise. In the summer of 1864, he led his troops at the Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse, sometimes just referred to as the Battle of Spotsylvania. This battle was a significant engagement during the American Civil War, occurring from May 8th to May 21st, 1864. As part of the Overland Campaign, and took place in Spotsylvania County, Virginia, between the Union Army of the Potomac, commanded by General Ulysses S. Grant, and the Confederate Army of Northern Virginia, led by General Robert E. Lee. The battle was a continuation of the intense fighting that characterized the Overland Campaign, where Grant sought to engage Lee's forces and push towards Richmond, the Confederate capital. It was the 9th of May, 1864, so the second day of the battle. Sedgwick's men were daringly prodding the edges of the Confederate defenses just ahead of the left flank. Confederate sharpshooters were about 1,000 yards or 900 meters away, and their bullets were flying left and right just past the Union soldiers' heads. They could hear the bullets whistling past them as they were ducking for cover. That's a normal reaction, I would say, to being under fire, right? Hit the deck, get down low. But General Sedgwick was not having it. He remained walking upright, telling his men to get up and fight. He is quoted as saying, quote, "What? Men dodging this way for single bullets? What will you do when they open fire along the whole line?" End quote. And his men didn't want to be seen as cowards, but they also didn't want to die, so they stayed down. And so Sedgwick stood there, yelling, quote, "Why are you dodging like this? They couldn't hit an elephant at this distance," end quote. Thus speaking his last words, because he was immediately hit by a bullet just under his left eye. This is an eyewitness report by his chief of staff, Martin T. McMahon, quote, "The sharpshooter's bullets were flying all around, making whistling noises. The same shrill whistle closing with a dull, heavy stroke interrupted me, and I remember distinctly that I commenced to say, 'General, they're firing explosive bullets,' when his face turned slowly to me, and blood spurting from his left cheek under his eye in a steady stream brought to me the first knowledge of our great disaster. He fell in my direction, and I was so close to him that my efforts to support him failed, and I went to the ground with him." Corps medical personnel were immediately summoned, but Sedgwick never regained consciousness and continued to bleed out for some time until his hair was soaked with blood. End quote. That's a tough one.
It's sad. It's sad.
It's always sad. I mean, it's awful because...
Yes, it was cockiness, but also he was rather well-liked by his men, and I think he tried to, you know, be leading by example.
Mm-hmm.
So
there are a lot of modern cases where things like this have happened, and we'll never cover them because it's just, it's too soon. But like, there was an attorney who shot himself in the head demonstrating something on the stand.
Yeah, that was also 18-something-something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was after this, you know. That's a case we could probably talk about. But in a more recent case, there was somebody saying how safe the windows were and just throwing himself against the window and he fell through. And, you know, I mean, it's not like these kind of things don't happen.
And we talked about other weird death already in some of our episodes. For example, I know we mentioned Charles the VIII, King of France, who was in such a hurry to go to some medieval tennis match that he hit his head on a door frame and died later that day. I think that was in the Marguerite Carte Rouge.
I think so.
Yeah. We also mentioned Alfred Frederick, King of Sweden, who basically ate himself to death. I don't know when was that. Was that when we talked about the bad teeth of Louis?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. We need a glossary. We need a fresh hell glossary now.
Yeah. Oh, another one I remember. That was a woman. It was Archduchess Matilda of Austria who was trying to hide her cigarette and set her dress on fire. I think that was during the first Victorian death.
It was the Victorian death trip. That was so sad.
Yeah.
That was like, oh, that very one was sad. Yeah.
So yeah, I hope that was interesting to our listeners.
I'm sure it was. It'll be interesting to someone. It was interesting to me. What's your something good this week? What you got?
My something good is my nephew spent a night here at my house and, you know, we ordered a pizza and watched a movie and we watched the third Guardians of the Galaxy. And I have to say, I really enjoyed it. I loved the first one. I really like the Guardians. I think they're really funny and entertaining. I was not such a fan of the second one, but the third one was really good. I'm not going to spoil anything, but if you haven't watched it and are going to watch it and you are listeners of ours who share the kind of same compassion for animals, please keep your tissues close by. Nothing's happening. Nobody's dying.
No, but okay. It's just sad.
Very sad. Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad you guys had a good time.
Yeah.
I had a great time with my nieces. I think last week I was still on the beach with them and recording from not the best space, but it's fine. My favorite was when we had that combination of like weed whacker,
electrical interference, birds.
Yeah, birds. There was a lot happening, but that was a great week and we made you a t-shirt and now I know
so
how
excited
to do it. So I'm going to make more. We're going to do it again. Moose is going to come visit and we're going to get better quality shirts and stuff. And like, we just got like a kit for kids, you know, and cheap t-shirts. So that's what I'm sending you. But now we kind of know how to do it. So we're going to get better stuff and make some tie-dye, dude.
What's your something good?
My something good is kind of a weird one. I just have a few people to say hi to from our trip that I just keep meaning to say hi to. And I'm afraid if I don't, I'll forget. Because we had such a good time. But like Michael, who took such good care of us on our cruise, if you're listening, stay in touch. You have my card. I meant it when I said we have enough space for your whole family to come visit. And in Scotland, hi to Marcia at Carberry Tower. We stayed at, this isn't an ad for any of these places. This is just places we were. She was an employee that I got to talking about ghosts with, and she gave us a great little tour, and I can't wait to go back there. Also, big, big shout out to the Meerkat Grill in Musselburgh, outside Edinburgh. Go see Graham. Tell him I sent you. Go have one of his world-famous haggis cigars and go check out his next doggy breakfast. They do these breakfasts where you can come with your dog and like sit down and have coffee and like a breakfast roll. And it goes to the local animal charity. It's awesome.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah, they have a charity shop donation bin in their parking lot, which Moose, Misty, and I maybe left most of our winter goods in so that we could make room for all the tweed we bought in Scotland. It's fine. No regrets. I can't wait to go back, but go say hi. Tell them we sent you. But yeah, great time with my nieces. Great time. Just memories. Happy, happy memories.
It's the most important.
It is. It's all we have in the end.
All right. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our other episodes, I think the cat episode was very well received. We got a lot of nice messages about that
one. Nice.
Please make sure to check on your podcast app to see if you can leave us a rating and or review. We would really appreciate that. Also, as I said, please don't forget to check your email. You should by now have received the email informing you if you are a voter. So if you got that one, please go and vote for us. And also look through the other categories and look at the fantastic podcasts that are there. What else? Patreon. Our next Patreon get-together for the murder tier is on 29th of August, right?
Yeah, I think that's
right. So we're looking forward to that one. Go to patreon.com to look at all the tiers. Search for Fresh Hell. We pop right up. Or go to our webpage, freshhellpodcast.com. There you find all the links to Patreon, to our new merch store with some new designs. What else? To our email, our PO box. You find everything there. If you have any suggestions, if you have any listener story for Halloween, for example, please send us an email.
Oh, yeah. It's time to start sending those in.
Yeah.
We need those listener stories for our Halloween episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Please tell your pets we said hi. All the pets, the dogs, the cats, the donkeys, the deers. The ones who eat figs or don't. Tell them we said hi. Tell them we miss them. Tell them we love them. Hug them, cuddle them. Take them to the vet. Treat them nicely. Yada, yada, yada. You know everything I always tell you and Annie always tells you. You know the drill.
Yeah.
Be kind to them. Be kind to your fellow human being. And be kind to yourself. And that's the hardest part of it all.
Yeah. If you're going through hell.
Keep going. Tschüss.
Bye-bye.